Someone asked me the other day, and said, yeah, I just really want to go home.
Welcome, everybody, to our last hearing with any work sessions for the 2015 legislature. This is June 3rd, my sister's birthday, 2015. Welcome to the House Committee on Human Services and Housing. I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 444. Robin, could you please remind us of the bill?
Certainly. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 444, we heard it on Monday, and it requires a report on housing stabilization programs by July 1st, 2016, from Housing and Community Services in consultation with Oregon Housing Authority and Department of Human Services, outlines items to be addressed in the report. There is no revenue impact. There's a minimal fiscal impact. The statements are on OLIS if anyone cares to see them. And there is no amendment.
Chair Kenny Geyer, I move Senate Bill 444 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Vice Chair Peluso moves Senate Bill 444 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there a discussion? I would just like to say briefly that if we get the report July of 2016, that gives us a couple of months to consider whether any of you or I as chair for committee bill wants to introduce any legislation. So for pre-session, having legislative drafts, which are usually due in mid-September, that gives a couple months. So I think that timing is good. Okay. Any other discussion or questions? If no, Clark, can you please call the roll?
Representative Bueller?
Yes.
Representative Evans?
Yes.
Representative Gallegos?
Aye.
Representative Hayden?
Aye.
Representative Parrish?
Excused.
Representative Taylor?
Aye.
Vice Chair Peluso?
Aye.
Vice Chair Stark?
Excused.
And Chair Kenny Geyer?
Aye. The motion passes. Close. Oh, yes, a carrier for that. Someone passionate about housing?
Sure.
Gallegos?
Oh,
okay. Well, there's going to be another one coming up, so. Okay, I close the work session on Senate Bill 444. Open a work session on Senate Bill 244. And Robin, please summarize the bill.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 244, as you recall, we heard this on Monday as well. The bill modifies and updates language for clarity regarding housing programs administered by Oregon Housing and Community Services Department, aligns eligibility criteria for Housing Development Guarantee Program and the General Housing Account Program, directs State Housing Council to adopt policy to concentrate distribution of funds according to the greatest need for persons having low income and very low income. There is a dash one amendment pending that restores statute language on rulemaking regarding geographic distribution of funds. There is no revenue impact. It has a minimal fiscal impact and clearly no subsequent referral at this late date.
Chair Kenny Geyer. I move to adopt the dash one amendment dated 5/22/15.
Vice Chair Peluso moves to adopt the dash one amendment stated 5/22/15. Is there any discussion? Okay, is there any objection? If not, the motion carries. Or the amendments are adopted. Could be official.
Chair Kenny Geyer, I move Senate Bill 244 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Peluso moves Senate Bill 244 is amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? All right, no questions. Clerk, can you please call the roll?
Representative Evans?
Yes.
Representative Gallegos?
Yes.
Representative Hayden?
Aye.
Representative Parrish?
Excused.
Representative Taylor?
Aye.
Representative Bueller?
Yes.
Vice Chair Peluso?
Aye.
Vice Chair Stark?
Excused.
And Chair Kenny Geyer?
Aye. Okay. Motion passes. And carrier?
Sure.
Representative Taylor. All right. Close the work session on Senate Bill 244. We are going to start an informational hearing at some point because I know some people have to leave early. When we have a full deck here, we plan to take a group shot because it's our last time of up until June 17th. I'm worried we might lose people at that meeting since there's nothing to vote on. So at some point, we will interrupt it and have our group shot. So please bear with us. But
here, Kenny Geyer, I just moved that they could all be in the group shot.
Oh, there you go. Human services.
That's right. This would be a great party shot.
They put the human in human services.
There you go.
That's right. Two of them would fill in.
Okay, great. Yeah, so
Dewey Parrish and Pickus Stark, and let's do it.
We could do there that. You go. Who wants to be Representative Parrish?
There you go.
Thank you.
All right, she's good. So we are going to open an informational meeting on challenges facing Oregon's renters. And I'd like to call up Omar Carrillo and Lynn McConnell to start. First panel.
Chair Kenny Geyer, members of the committee. My name is Omar Carrillo-Pinajero. I'm the Housing Policy Manager at Neighborhood Partnerships, a nonprofit that convenes the Oregon Housing Alliance, a coalition of more than 60 members focused on increasing resources and attention to housing issues in the state legislature. We represent a variety of interests from renters to affordable housing developers to local jurisdictions. Thank you so much for giving us the opportunity to testify today on this very important issue. We're excited to see that there are so many housing champions in this committee. Barriers to housing, as you know, have come to the forefront of many of things that many Oregonians care about, and that's because they are seeing the challenges everywhere. As you've heard before, more than 20,000 children experienced homelessness last school year. One out of four households pays more than 50% of their income on rents across the state. And the National Low Income Housing Coalition recently released their out of reach report, which shows that there's a continuing gap between the wages that people make and the rental prices. It shows that to afford a market rate two-bedroom apartment, an Oregonian would have to make $16.61 an hour. That's $16.23 in Medford and $18.15 in Portland. Our partners across the state, some of whom you will hear from today, report historic difficulty placing people in permanent housing. 211 reports that the top unmet housing needs that they get callers for are rental assistance and community shelters. This is despite them successfully referring 12,532 people for rent payment assistance and over 7,800 to shelters in 2014. The declining capacity of our homeless service providers to find permanent housing options for family is creating bottlenecks and driving costs in other parts of our systems. For example, shelter stays are increasing because of the inability of families to be placed in permanent housing. This means that more people are often transitioning from shelters back to the streets. It also means that new people are getting into shelters because new beds are not turning out as frequently, or new people are not getting into shelters. Business leaders, social service providers, and community advocates note the lack of affordable housing to people at all income levels in different parts of the state. And it really the issue has been raised because it threatens the region's economy and the basic well-being of many Oregonians. We see evidence of this in Eugene, Ashland, and Portland with tents by the sides of highways and so many people sleeping in doorways. It's even less visible in places like Canby, where people sleep in rest areas, in parks, in forests. And even less visible are the many folks who are finding themselves having to double up and living in small spaces and insecure circumstances with family members and friends and don't know who they will live with next. The inability to place and maintain people in permanent housing is making all our other human services less effective, as you heard from us last Monday. And really, a study released earlier this year found that mothers who were recently evicted faced higher levels of material hardship, were more likely to suffer from depression, and reported worse health outcomes for themselves and their children, as well as more stress related to their parents than similar mothers who had not been evicted. The study found that the effects of these evictions showed up years after the eviction happened. So it continued to affect their lives, you know, 4, 5, 10 years after this. Last month, the Oregon Housing Alliance and our partners asked Oregonians to share some of their experiences. We asked specifically, what would change in your life and your experience with available and affordable homes? We heard from a mother of 3 small children with a husband who was not dealing with the stresses of life very well and became physically abusive. She had to leave him and take her 3 kids. She has not been able to make enough to support her 3 children and pay the going rate for housing and meet the other basic necessities of that their children need. We heard from a family with 2 working teens who have to contribute their incomes to help them pay for rent every month instead of saving them for their education. We heard from a couple who's considering splitting up because they think that they might be able to find housing more easily if they're not together as a couple. We heard from service providers who receive over 100 calls per week from seniors with low incomes who recently had a rent increase and can no longer afford their apartment with the fixed incomes that they have. And we also heard from friends who witnessed the death of their friends on the street. We believe that as a state we can do better. As these experiences show, homes can improve health, increase safety, grow local economies, and help kids succeed in school. The barriers you will hear about prevent families and Oregon from achieving all our state goals. There's still work to finish this session, and more will be done to move forward. We appreciate your commitment to this effort and look forward to continuing to work together to find solutions. Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Lynn McConnell. I work with Neighbor Impact in Central Oregon. Neighbor Impact is a large social services agency throughout Crook, Deschutes, and Jefferson County. And through our 16 major lines of business, we serve 1 out of every 4 folks in Central Oregon each year. I wanted to start with a story that I think emphasizes what's going on in our region and the challenges behind housing. We served a client named Natasha Kaywood. She came to Neighbor Impact last year in August, and she had been laid off from her medical position 1 month before her son was born. She has 2 9-year-old girls at home, so that disqualified her from any sort of FEMLA benefits, and she was desperate for help after having a pretty comfortable existence. She had a gap in her funds until unemployment came through, and no child support at that time. So we gave her short-term rental assistance. Unfortunately, the third payment was rejected by the landlord because he determined that he could sell the home that she was living in and find, you know, much more money in a different source, even though she was a great renter. She has good credit. She was on-time payments. They had a respectful relationship. She decided all these life changes maybe meant she should change course and decided to pursue a new career, tried to go back to school and enrolled, and wasn't able to get enough classes to get financial aid. So she moved in with friends with her 3 small children, one of them's an infant, and continued to look for work, continued to look for housing. Finally, she found both. We helped her with the security deposit with EHA funds, and she was able to move in to I'm sorry, I might have been wrong on the EHA piece. We helped her with her okay. deposit. Okay. She's since obtained work and is now back on her feet. The reason that I think that this story is important is because it demonstrates that everyone is subject to the housing crisis right now, even people who don't have any bad marks on their history. And Natasha did everything she possibly could in her situation and still needed a little bit of assistance from us. So our vacancy rate in Central Oregon right now is 1.5%. That's a huge improvement over last year when it was less than 1%. But what that translates into is 56 available units in all of Central Oregon for 200,000 people. This is an improvement, as I said. It also means that there is one unit available in Prineville, one unit available in all of Lapine, and none in Sisters or Sun River. As you all know, the distance between some of our towns is several hours. And as Bend, with the major metropolitan hub where much of the employment is, folks have to consider that in their housing decisions. The vast majority of units that were available this past year were 3-plus bedrooms, which average in Bend over $1,300 a month. Without those 3-bedroom units, there are 20 units available in all of Central Oregon last year. So this is really a dire circumstance. And I'm sure you guys know this, but I'm sort of a math geek at times. to afford $1,300 a month, you would need at minimum wage to work 146 hours. And that's if you have no other expenses to cover. Omar mentioned rent burden. More than half of Central Oregonians are rent burdened, and that means they pay a significant amount of their income to rent or housing generally. This leaves a deficiency in other areas such as food, medical care, prescriptions, childcare, things like that. And we see this in all of the sectors of our agency. Folks who are spending too much on housing are going to come in to us for food or for energy assistance or any number of other services. How does this compare with 10 years ago? I think that the biggest difference is that the population in Bend 10 years ago was 61,000, and we're now over 81,000. And yet housing development nearly stopped during the last 10 years. So we're facing considerably more pressure in the market than we were before. Bank-owned homes still exist. I'm sure you guys have heard about this at other times. They're still readily apparent in parts of Bend, and often they are vacant, so they're not part of the accessible housing stock. And because of the cash market in Central Oregon, and at last count, Oregon, approximately 30% of the sales were in cash, home sales, and because of the second home and vacation market, the private market doesn't have the incentive or really the ability to keep up with demand. Accessing capital from state and federal sources to build houses is extremely complex. There are one or maybe two entities in Central Oregon who have the capability and capacity to access tax credits and other funding sources, which often need to be intermeshed to build. All of these factors, of course, lead to more demand and less supply. So Neighbor Impact and a number of other organizations in the region have partnered. We have an active partnership with our regional housing authority, Housing Works, to try to develop properties. There's a lot of interest, and we are accessing all sorts of capital to try to put it together. And over the last year and a half, we have been unable to build a single unit in partnership because of the significant challenges that we face in both land supply and in prices, and being able to pull all the complex funding sources together. We, Central Oregon, needs any help you all can give to support the nonprofit capacity to build where there's interest and willingness, and also incentives for private market so that they can viably choose to support workforce housing and help us, because we can't do it all. Thank you.
Any questions?
I was looking at you, Representative Bueller. It's your hometown there.
I was just waiting around. I don't want. Thanks for your testimony and bringing a really important problem to light. We've heard it before here this session. I'm surprised you didn't mention the problem with lack of supply of buildable land as a contributing cause of our mismatch between supply and demand of affordable housing, or the high system development charges that exist not only in Bend but many other cities in Oregon. What role does that play? Or the fact that there's not good paying jobs because we've had a deterioration of our manufacturer base in the country, or we have deteriorating schools and we don't have the ability to educate people sufficiently so they can even pass a remedial algebra class at Central Oregon Community College. How come we're not focusing on these issues?
So I serve on one of the UGB committees with the City of Bend, and I'd be happy to discuss that with you. I definitely think that land use is one piece of the puzzle. Certainly, in my opinion, that's not going to solve every problem that there is with the affordable housing crisis. It needs to be approached in many different ways. You brought up a number of those just now. And I lost my train of thought. I'm sorry.
I just think there we need to emphasize there's many, many reasons for this problem. I think too often we run to a solution in this building before adequately defining the problem. And I understand people, there's urgency and we want to solve it and our best intentions, but I think it can... if I misdiagnose the patient and what I do as a physician and start the wrong treatment, I can kill someone. And I think all too often we don't diagnose the problem accurately. And so I think some of the other things we need to concentrate on is making sure people are educated to a level where they actually can get a good paying job. I think we need to focus on encouraging employers here that they can pay living wages. And I think we need to look at our land use planning process so that it doesn't take literally decades in millions of dollars for cities to get buildable land.
May I? One other thing, a study, and I could give you the quote from it that I saw recently. Employers actually look more at the availability of affordable housing in determining where to locate their business than they do of most other factors. The availability of affordable housing for their workforce actually ranks higher than public school ratings, climate, recreational opportunities, which is a big one for us in Central Oregon, and nearby colleges. The only thing I believe that ranks higher than that in this study was the crime rate. So I'm really glad that you brought that up, because I think that so many things do tie back to affordable housing and the ability of affordable housing. We at Neighbor Impact work very closely with EDCO, with the Chamber of Commerce. We do a little bit of development, mostly on individual development account businesses, and we welcome anything that this panel can do to help us with both the housing issue and with anything that we can support our community with. So thank you.
Yeah, and I think you make a great point. EDCO, which is the Economic Development Central Oregon, there's been at least one significant employer bypass Central Oregon simply because they said, we'd love to come here, this is where we want to be, but there's simply not housing for our workers.
I want to build on Representative Wheeler's question, because he's brought up land use a number of times, and it's great that you're on the UGB. I didn't realize that. So you might be able to help us. Each region has different factors that come into play about why there's not enough affordable housing or not enough jobs with livable wages that can pay for housing. My understanding of the UGB is that once you surpass a certain density, that triggers the UGB review process to allow more land, and that Bend, along with other places, has not hit that density level yet, and so that is why I think most people push back on the idea of that being the central piece, and that I often hear that Bend, one of the problems is that your area is so desirable that the population increased so fast and the housing couldn't keep up with it, particularly in the last few years when the credit from banks really dried up, and so the developers who were doing a lot of housing development in the Central Oregon region really kind of came to a standstill at a time where it was still pretty desirable and people wanted to move, and some of them are retirees or they have self-employment and internet employment and are not relying on some of those employers. So it's a your region better than I do, certainly, but I think that Representative Bueller has brought up the issue of land use a number of times, and so I'm just curious, since you are on the UGB committee, if you could address that particular issue.
So I am one of 60, I believe, volunteer members who are in some way affiliated with the UGB committees in Bend. So I would not want to represent all that is going on behind the scenes or the City of Bend opinion. I am one individual. It's a very complex process, and City of Bend did apply in the early 2000s for a UGB expansion. The goal, in my understanding, is to have a 20-year supply of land for housing and employment and other uses in each of the cities. We applied and evidently asked for too much, and so it was remanded, and that's the phase that we're in right now. The estimates
and there was no compromise. It was just yes or no.
Certain factors were accepted, like the population growth. Mm-hmm. We're expected to have a certain population growth within the span of the time period. So those pieces were accepted, and we're building off of that to look forward through the planning period. My understanding from the Builders Association is that currently in Bend, we have approximately 2 years land supply if you look at all vacant lots in Bend. Mm-hmm. And we don't expect the UGB remand to come through until right around that time. So I think that the discussion that I had today with you guys about the crises that we're seeing and how housing is affecting really every income level in Central Oregon is going to continue to be true moving forward.
Okay.
I think we have a land use system is one approach fits all, which I'm very supportive of limiting cities from spreading beyond a reasonable level. But I think what works in the Willamette Valley doesn't necessarily work in Central Oregon, where we don't have that high-value farmland that you all have that we need to protect. It's very different. You couldn't even grow something on the land that's been designated as farmland anyway, mainly because you don't have water in Central Oregon. You know? And so I think this one approach fits all regions of the state, I think, is one point of departure that we need to really look at in terms mm-hmm. of dealing with.
Although there is a lot of local control
and also
within that framework.
Yeah, but not with regards to designation of agricultural land. And then the density issue. People move to Central Oregon many times because they don't want highly dense communities. They many times move from Multnomah County because they're at a stage in life where they just don't want that kind of lifestyle. Mm-hmm. So I think we just need to look at it. But
I want to follow up another of his questions. Are the CDCs higher in Central Oregon than they are other places, or is this just a problem all over?
SDC, system development charges.
Yes.
I don't feel like I can answer that. I'm hoping that one of my colleagues today can do a better job. But interestingly, the front page of the bulletin, I'm not sure if you saw that today, Representative Bueller, there was a discussion from Parks about giving back to the affordable housing problem in City of Bend. So I'm feeling extremely hopeful that we really are such a collaborative community. I'm hopeful that we'll all come together to look at this challenge and try to do everything we can to resolve it.
Great. Okay, thank you so much. Okay, I'd like to call up the next panel. Jim Hukari, Erica Hente, and Crystal Rogers, please. Our second and last panel. Who wants to start?
Who would like to go first? Sure. Ladies first.
I'm welcome to go. All right. Yeah. I'm Crystal Rogers. I'm here from Portland, Oregon with Volunteers of America Home Free. We're a domestic violence intervention program, one of 11 programs up in Portland who are providing housing assistance to domestic violence survivors. I think lots of folks here have already touched on some of the problems and challenges facing renters, but also there are some unique challenges that survivors are facing. So what we know about domestic violence within the homeless population, domestic violence is a primary cause of housing instability and homelessness for low-income families. Not only is poverty associated with higher rates of domestic violence and higher rates of repeat victimizations when affordable housing cannot be secured, many survivors of domestic violence are forced to stay or return to their abusers when they can't find adequate housing. This combined with the impact of domestic violence, poverty, and housing instability can be devastating for families. Here at Home Free, at Home Free, we serve about 55 to 75 families in our Housing First program throughout the year. We typically serve people for about 6 to 9 months, offering short-term rent assistance and some other flexible client assistance to help people maintain their housing. We also have a motel vouchering program at Home Free where we're able to provide short-term rent assistance and motel vouchering for folks who aren't able to access our shelter programs. We are a pretty large county compared compared to a lot of other counties here in Oregon, but we only have 75 emergency shelter beds for folks who are accessing domestic violence shelters, and that breaks down to about 32 to 30 spaces at any given time for families who are seeking emergency shelter. When we know that 1 in 7 women are experiencing violence in Multnomah County, I think that's really staggering to think about the lack of actual emergency shelter options and then housing options. I think Omar had mentioned earlier about shelter stays are increasing as we're finding that rent is harder and harder to afford and that units are harder and harder for folks to identify. So shelters that typically had a max stay of maybe 30 days are now increasing their stay to 60, sometimes even 90 days, just because there's not a place to put people. Our warming shelters are slated to close here in a couple weeks, and my colleague Katie and I are working to really talk with our advocates on our hotline about how will we be safety planning with folks when they're calling and there is not an emergency shelter for them to go. There isn't a warming shelter for them to go. And now we're going to have to be talking with people about how do we safety plan with folks to stay with their kids in a car? Can they go to a Sherry's all night? Is there a place where they can be at a 24-hour fitness with folks that may not stand out? And we're having to safety plan around things. We know that homelessness makes people more vulnerable, but then we also have domestic violence happening for folks. So we have to be thinking about what part of the city, is it even going to be safe for them to leave or to live if they have to leave now? I have a young woman who's been on my housing caseload for about the last year. She's been doing really well. She's almost working full time. She's in school. She's a mother of 2 young children. Unfortunately, we know domestic violence often happens again. She was recently reassaulted at her unit and is no longer safe to be there after being in that unit for over a year. So now we are working to have to try to find her a new place to go. She's got very minimal barriers to housing, actually really great rental history despite the domestic violence that's happened at her unit before. She's, like I said, has some income to be able to show for herself, but we can't find a unit that she can get approved for to just get her in, and we're able to actually offer assistance to get her in. For some of our other folks who are facing more significant challenges, we're finding that we're having people want deposits that are maybe double or triple of that we're used to, and so even if we are able to find somebody a unit that they can move into, it's difficult to even find the funds often to get them there. We have had a couple, probably even over just the last month or so, people who've been selected for Section 8 vouchers who've actually had to let those go, and even with an extension, were not able to find housing that they were approved for. So I think even if we are able to connect people with housing supports, what we're finding is that a lot of those dollars are just kind of going by the wayside when we're not able to get people into units. Thank you. Any questions that you all have for me about domestic violence? Yeah. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Erica Henty, and I'm the regional director of the Legal Aid Office in Central Oregon that serves Crook, Jefferson, and Deschutes counties. So the individuals that we serve in my office are individuals who have income that is at or below 125% of the federal poverty level. And what we've been seeing is the same things that you've already heard from the other panelists. We're finding that because of the intense market pressures in Bend and because of the really low vacancy rate, people are just being sort of priced out of housing. For our folks, a lot of times that means they're doubling up in not great housing situations. Some of them are renting rooms in individual homes, which is just causing sort of some bad situations that are causing our clients to move from housing situation to housing situation. So that lack of housing stability. And without that housing stability, our clients find it really difficult to try to pursue. Many of our clients are disabled, trying to pursue their health care treatment when they're constantly moving around, just trying to find a place to be. It's also causing problems with employment opportunities for our folks that are working, trying to maintain employment when they don't know where they're going to be spending, you know, the next night or the next week. Also an impact on the children and the families that we serve. Again, difficulties with trying to maintain regular schedules, trying to maintain just their involvement in schools when their fundamental needs like housing aren't being met. I think the vacancy rent in Bend has already been mentioned as a pretty abysmal one at around 1 or 1.5%. So what that means for some of our clients is that they're moving further out into more rural areas to try to find housing that they can afford. What that means is they're spending more of their money on transportation as the Bend areas where a lot of the jobs are. And so moving an hour out to find something they can afford is just eating up more of their resources for transportation. Also, the availability of services in some of those outlying areas is pretty limited. And so it just means that our clients are getting more and more isolated and not being able to attend to their other needs, mental health needs, other kinds of community supports. We're finding a high percentage of the clients that we're serving that are doing what we're calling couch surfing, where they're staying with friends, staying with family members. Again, not stable housing situations, but housing situations that are very sometimes volatile, depending on how many people are trying to share the housing units that are available. And again, the higher percentage of their income that they're having to spend on housing has been testified to already. So that's pushing them to have to seek more assistance with things like utilities, gas, and other things like that. For our folks that are on some kind of a fixed income, for instance, disability or retirement benefits, if they're able to find units they can afford, which is obviously really difficult, the deposit issue that was mentioned is something that we're running up against. Even folks with good credit and steady source of income aren't being able to get into units if they're available. Folks we're seeing in our service area who are obtaining the Section 8 housing assistance, again, not being able to find units, partly because there's just not that many units to find, but also the units are going so quickly that by the time they get their paperwork together and kind of start going through the process, the units have already been rented. So for the clients that we're serving, the importance that we're seeing is just having, you know, the rental assistance funds available, more shelter space, because we're finding similar situations where folks just don't even have a place to go in local homeless shelters if they needed that, and just more affordable housing resources and more housing units in general to provide for this need that's very great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chairperson Kenny Geyer and members, thank you for hearing us today. My name is Jim Hukari. I'm from Shelter Care in Lane County. I'm the program administrator of the Supported Housing Program, and we serve in the Supported Housing Program approximately 220, 230 folks who all are severely and persistently mentally ill, who have a long history of homelessness, or we also are able to serve folks who are at risk of homelessness. We do that through three different Section 8 projects that were built or bought by HUD. In the past 10 or 20 years, that's about 70 or so folks. We also have a number of folks who have their own Section 8 voucher. I'm sure you're all aware of the number of people who are served through Shelter Plus Care vouchers. And then this year, or in the last 8-10 months, we've started here in Oregon a state rental assistance supplement that's been provided. And maybe I can just share with you the kind of person we serve and the kind of obstacles they face in telling you a story. Obviously, as an administrator, I'm a bit removed from folks day to day, but I do have the opportunity every week, at least two or three times, to meet somebody and hear their story and hear what situation they're facing. This week, I got to meet Linda. She's a 62-year-old woman who is bipolar and suffers from PTSD. As you can imagine, probably, you know, 98% of our folks come from significant trauma backgrounds before we ever see them. And she's also alcohol dependent. She uses a cane, so mobility is an issue, and therefore stairs and things like that can be a real real problem or real challenge for her. At the beginning of this year, she became homeless, really not, I want to say, of any fault of her own. She was living with her partner. They could no longer live together harmoniously, so she was forced to leave. He stayed. They were both on the lease, and so he remained in the apartment. And then a couple months later, he was evicted because of his own behavior, and part of that was not paying his rent. Unfortunately, because she was also on the lease, she too was evicted, and she too owed money to the landlord. She didn't really understand that, and so when she did, with the help of our housing folks, go look for housing, she reported that she was never evicted from anywhere. And she reported she didn't owe anybody any money. So obviously she was lying, not intentionally, but she didn't understand what she actually was, what she actually owed folks and how she was implicated in this gentleman's behavior. So she has little rent history of her own. The rent history she does have, the most recent, is negative. She owes money to a former landlord. And she, of course, has no money, even because, even if we can find her a unit to rent on her own, she has no money to move in. She has no deposit money. She has no money for cleaning deposits, for those security things that are required. And so we are desperately trying to serve Linda and find her housing. And interestingly, our greatest ally has been individual on-site property managers who are willing to overlook the requirements of their properties. They're willing to waive those kind of negative things that are on your history rental reports, or waive the deposits so that we can actually move folks in. As you know, Lane County is maybe not the most densely populated area in Oregon, but it's fairly well built up. And what I see as ways that we could possibly address the immediate needs is, one, if there was a way. We have great housing subsidy programs, but we don't have money, even with SPC vouchers or Section 8 vouchers, to move people into apartments. And that can be, or even to pay, sometimes pay for past debt, so that that can be wiped out and a person can get a clean slate and a new start. The other thing, if we could possibly incentivize risk-taking on the property of property managers. I mean, it wouldn't be a large financial investment, but if we could say, okay, we can financially cover your risk, whatever that might entail, so that if this doesn't work out, even with the support of organizations like ShelterCare and Laurel Hill Center in Lane County, we can make sure that you don't suffer any financial loss in allowing this person to move into what's already, you know, low-cost housing in our area. So we're serving lots of folks like Linda. We're seeing more and more people who are chronically homeless. In Lane County, we just did the point-in-time homelessness count in January. There were over 1,400 folks who were counted on that one day. 30% of them were diagnosed with severe and persistent mental illnesses. So those folks are living on the street, impacting
Did
all of
say
us, impacting this.
30%?
30%.
I would have thought it was even higher.
Yeah, 30% in Lane County in this last point in time count were mentally ill, had diagnoses of mental illness. A lot of folks who are mentally ill don't know it or don't want to report that. So that's the numbers that came out in the point in time count. So Linda is the kind of person we're serving all the time, and we certainly appreciate the help you've given and the support you're giving us in being able to do that. And we want to certainly partner in how we can address and maybe get over that last finish line so more folks like Linda can be housed. Thank you for your time.
Representative Buehler.
Yeah, thank you for your testimony. Can you tell me, repeat how many homeless in the point in time in Lane County?
In January of this year, there were 1,473 people counted, which was actually about 18-19% less than 2013. The point in time of homelessness count is done every 2 years, and then those other years, the even number years, actually are folks in shelters. They are counted in.
And what's the population of Lane County?
I don't know. 220,000? Is that right? I don't know.
What was the count in Deschutes County?
I actually have the press release, so let me look it up. I want to say it was right around 1,200, and our population is about 200,000.
But we're not competing with Deschutes County.
Lane County, 358,000.
Oh, wow.
If you're doing it countywide.
Getting bigger.
What was Deschutes County?
Tri-County region, 2,087.
What was Deschutes County?
Tri-County.
They don't
Deschutes,
separate.
I'm sorry, I don't
population.
Have just the Deschutes County.
And what was the number of the homeless point in time again?
For us?
Yeah.
Was 1,473.
Is that homeless or mentally ill? Or both?
Homeless. Those are homeless. 30% of those, roughly 30%.
Tri-County.
were identified themselves as mentally ill.
Deschutes is 170,000, and you have to look up. The Tri-County would be Jefferson and what else?
Crook.
Crook. So maybe you could look those up. Representative Evans.
Yep. This isn't going to help the dilemma of who has it worse between Deschutes or Lane, but I do know when it comes to veterans and veterans homeless that depending on which agency you talk to, there's a different definition for homeless. Mm. Some definitions cover the person who is staying on the friend's couch. Mm. Some do not. Mm. Some, they actually have to be in some type of services or care to be counted.
Yep.
Unfortunately, we sometimes are slave to our own definitions. So I would suggest that there appears to be just too many people homeless, and we need to work on getting more housing. So thank you.
So I know the HUD definition, which we follow, does not count people who are couch surfing because they're considered housed.
Right. So this is truly homeless.
Mm-hmm.
No roof over the head.
Right. Or the Eugene Mission, for instance. Right. They would be counted as homeless.
They would be counted.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
They would be.
So shelters, but not staying with family or in couches. Okay. Any other questions?
I sort of have a goofy one. So how many years have you been working on this? Have you been involved?
With Volunteers America?
Well, with the housing issues.
With housing for about the last 2 years.
Yeah.
I've been with VOA for 4, but I've been in the domestic violence field for about 10 years or so.
And so, and I mean, I just think collectively we probably have a lot of time in service of this.
So I've been working as a legal aid attorney for 15 years.
Sir?
Approximately 25 years.
Oh. And then
but not all here.
And then in the back there, or how many years for you?
In housing, yeah. It's only been less than 3 years. I was actually a legal aid person for a few years ago.
Yeah, and sir?
2.5 years.
So first, just thanks for doing it all. I mean, or doing all that you can. I'm interested in a lot of the housing issues in the Portland metro area because that's where I'm from. And it just sometimes feel like you're digging out of a hole that's just being filled in right behind you. So way to hang in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I just want to acknowledge, I mean, I think this panel's really talking about special needs populations and we're also talking about really just folks that really need affordable housing. I mean, it's interesting. I got a call about half hour ago from a constituent. She'd called me about a year ago and was having trouble keeping up with her rent in Washington County over by Intel, actually. And she had moved out of from Hawaii because it was too expensive there. And the rents continued to rise, and now she's decided she's going to move to Wisconsin with her daughter because she can't afford to continue living in Washington County. So, I mean, I think the range is obviously with special needs, but also just, as she said, there is no middle class anymore. She just cannot function anymore. Mm-hmm. I do want to acknowledge my own, special interest? No, I don't think that's what I want to say. But I am on the board for Volunteers of America, and I want to acknowledge that they do a lot of great work, and this program is really exceptional.
Mm-hmm. Pretty great.
So we came up with a Tri-County population of 213,000. So you have about double the amount of homeless if the definition is the same.
It's the same definition.
As Lane, and yet on a much smaller population. So clearly, Bend is a huge challenge. I'm curious if any of you, having been in these conversations, you know, have ideas that you want us to consider before the next session, 2016, or the big session, 2017. You know, of course, it seems like increasing the supply is at the root of a lot of it, and there are a lot of other issues that we've talked about as well, depending on the region. But what are some of the ideas that you have? If you could wave your magic wand, what do you wish that we in the legislature would focus on?
The biggest obstacle we face right now is just monies to move in. So as has been mentioned, there is a lot of Section 8 vouchers out there right now. Mm-hmm. And SBC vouchers usually come out in the fall. And even there, the money that HUD HACCSA provides us to help folks move in dries up very quickly. So if there was money available to just help pay, you know, deposits, sometimes a back payment to to other landlords so they can start off with a clean slate. That would be one thing. Another, I just think it would be helpful if, with the units that are already there, so without investing in new properties or building, and not trying to, I mean, I think one of the things we've faced and we've found doesn't work very well over the years is conjugating all the folks with special needs or with difficult histories in the same place, because it seems to trigger a lot of issues and just create difficulty for neighbors and so forth. But if we could incentivize risk-taking on the part of property managers, property owners, just allowing them to take a risk with somebody and give them a second chance, knowing that they're not going to lose out financially. I mean, we do that at some with veterans, for instance, and with other kind of special need populations. I think that might help.
So just to follow up on that, because we do have the new mitigation program mm-hmm. for up to $5,000, mm-hmm. you're talking about beyond that. And we did last time, in, just on Monday, talk. We had a special information hearing on Section 8. And so it did come up also, not just the mitigation, but helping with that security deposit mm-hmm. was an idea that came up. So we all took note of that. Are you talking about other things outside of Section 8 or other ways to enhance Section 8?
Probably both. I mean, there are these folks out there now with Section, because somehow there was a lot of Section 8 vouchers released, at least in Lane County, and there doesn't seem to be the money available that I'm hearing about or seeing to help folks move in.
It's the move-in.
And move-in. So move-in costs. And then just, as I said, sort of making it less risky for property owners to allow these at-risk kind of folks to move into their units.
I hate to interrupt, but since we now have a full chair, and
yes.
I have to leave at 5 minutes.
Okay. Well, are there any wrap-up questions? Because I think we're nearing the end of this anyway. We wanted to end our hearing with having a group shot up here. So, quick question from Representative.
Chair Kingar, thank you for the testimony. I do have a quick follow-up question on the Section 8. It was presented to our committee that those vouchers get, and I made a little graph here on my notes, that those Section 8 vouchers get pushed out at about 2 times the intent that they think they're going to try and fill to more and more and more people, hoping that those people can fill them so that they can get their funding for the following year so that they get filled. My concern with that is the neediest of the needy aren't actually receiving the help to help them find that home. And as you expand that Section 8 voucher by just dumping a bunch on the market, if you will, you're going to have to go to people that have a higher and higher access to transportation, mobility, wherewithal to actually go out and secure that house and maybe funds. And it almost, to me, sounded counterproductive, something that I would like to look at. How does that work in the field when you have, like you said, a whole bunch of Section 8 vouchers that got released, but then there's not the funding for it? Can you fill us in just very briefly on that? I know we have an extremely important photo to take.
So my experience is there's the funding to pay for the monthly rent, but there's not funding to move folks in. That's the obstacle. And there's because there's so many risks that the property owner has to take, the property manager, they're not willing to take that risk because of the history of the person. Because all of our folks are these sort of special need, these at-risk kind of populations, even not just their mental illness, but also kind of the history. So it's not just to pay the rent. It's to get them into the unit in the first place and to somehow make it more appealing for property owners to let at-risk folks move in.
And I would just say that some of the experience that we have kind of on the legal aid side and folks with vouchers is, again, just their inability to find housing with the voucher. So it's not about having too many vouchers out there. It's just that they can't find a unit. So the assistance is really important, especially for folks that we're dealing with that are at that poverty level. But if there's just not a unit that they can find or that they can find quickly enough to fulfill that voucher, because the time frames, which I think have been mentioned before, when you've got a 1% vacancy rate, for instance, or 1.5%.
So very quickly to the point, does the excess amount of vouchers, in either of your opinion, ever kind of block some of the neediest of the needy from getting their voucher filled, which, you know, maybe they don't have access to a car, so they have to take public transportation, or maybe they're wheelchair bound, and so it takes them two or three more days to find that property and get there and secure the application. Do those excess applications that we're pushing out to try and get our funding for next year hamper those neediest of the needy from getting that? That's my question.
I don't think it's a problem of too many vouchers. It's a problem of not enough units to use them in.
I actually really appreciate your question, and I think that we're seeing that a lot with our folks who, especially at the end of the fiscal year, we're being dumped with lots of opportunities of, like, people have money and they want us to be able to spend it on our participants. But I think the folks who are the neediest of the needy, the folks who have the greatest barriers, are the folks who just like you said, maybe don't have the access to the transportation, who've got a really marred credit history, who have a lot of past rental debt, so maybe more flexible spending, maybe not just for a deposit, but maybe to clear up past utility debts or things like that could
you
be
know
helpful.
What? We are going to lose Gallegos in 5 seconds. So would you all like to continue this afterwards?
No, I'm good. Appreciate that response.
All right. Thank you so much. I'm going to close the informational hearing. I'm going to adjourn our committee hearing.
Can we stand at ease so that Parrish and I can vote?
Okay, we will not adjourn right now. We're going to take a quick picture, and then we'll come back to suspending. We're going to stand at ease.
We're going to re-adjourn. We're going to come back.
We are coming back. We're coming back.
Coming back for more.
And, Madam Chair. Okay, I'm going to suspend the rules.
We have to ask for a motion to suspend.
And may I please have a motion to suspend the rules?
So moved.
Rules suspension for the purpose of allowing Representative Stark and Representative Parrish to vote on Senate Bills 244 and 444. Any objections? Seeing none, Clerk, will you please ask the roll call for Senate Bill 244?
Senate Bill 244, Representative Parrish.
Aye.
Vice Chair Stark?
Yes.
Okay. Close that work session on 244. Mm-hmm. Open work session on 444. Clerk, can you please ask the roll call for 444?
444, Representative Parrish?
Aye.
Vice Chair Stark?
Yes.
Okay. Motion's passed again. Votes are counted. Close the work session on 444. Okay. Any other announcements? We are having farm worker housing on June 10th.
Mm-hmm. Information forthcoming.
There's possibly a field trip on, what was it, June 15th?
June 15th
to a child care center that's very connected to WIC and a whole variety, not just a regular child care center. Information will be forthcoming. Our next hearing in this room is June 17th. We're going to have an informational hearing on the child welfare system. Several of us will be having a meeting in Portland before that time to hear the results of a DHS case in which a $4 million award was awarded. And so we will be reporting back on that and talking about next steps. So any other announcements? It's been great serving with you guys in terms of the passing bills. Look forward to continued involvement.
All right.
Adjourn the hearing.
All in favor?
Is that right?
Yep.